The material provided today is for informational purposes only. It should not be considered legal or financial advice. Consult with a financial professional for your own needs. John E. Sestina & Company disclaims any and all liability for the interpretation and use of the content provided today.
I need help getting out of my student loan debt.
I'm so worried. How am I going to afford taking care of my parents?
When's a good time to get into the market?
I'm really not sure when I should start taking my Social Security.
I wonder if I have enough insurance.
I wonder when I can retire.
It's time to talk about your money, managing to be wealthy. Our team of fee-only financial planners is ready to help you create better financial habits, envision your long-term goals, and understand money management better than ever. Our resident hosts of John E. Sestina & Company are on deck to show you the way.
Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Craig Konstantinovich and Cole Hammack. And today is going to be a fun topic, something that we hear a lot about from clients, and we get a lot of questions from people. Mm-hmm. It is also part of the news, given the big generation that's going through some of these things. Getting older isn't just about money. We talk a lot about money. It's about having a support system in place. And we've got a few podcasts on elder care and its intricacies, but there's more to it than that. So today we want to talk about who's going to be there for you when you need it.
Great topic.
And if you would start by giving just a quick insight into how to plan for long-term care side of things, let's kind of lay a foundation first.
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways, exactly to your point, that you can look at it. So you can start just the financial piece, right? So understanding what's affordable, what's appropriate, what's in your area, and then to even do a deeper dive still. We'll have clients, people we talk to, just actually do site visits. What sort of amenities might these places offer, if that's something we'd even be interested in? But then there's the behavioral aspect of it, too. Is that something that you would even care to be interested in? So whether that's a community, continued care community or a CCC, they may shorten it as, or a nursing home or assisted living or independent, or even going back is, hey, we want to stay in our home. How can we do this as long as possible? What do we need to do to make this home suitable for our aged years, or if we need to care for someone in the home? So there's so many layers to this conversation. And oftentimes, exactly to your point, it kind of starts and stops almost at the financial without really thinking about the what do you want from that point.
And if I can interject, you just had three different terms for the same thing. And one of them has a negative connotation to it. So it tends to be a very emotional conversation have with people. Mm-hmm. Can we explain to people the difference between long-term care, nursing home, and the other options?
Yeah, so a nursing home is really a facility that you would go to and receive your care for. Long-term care planning is just not being able to care for yourself, needing assistance, not being able to do your daily functions, your daily activities. And then from there's other levels of care. So a nursing home, to Cole's point, it may be robust enough to where it does include things like a memory care unit or progression of, you know, God forbid, other symptoms that may come into play as far as aging. Whereas if you receive in-home care, well, you've got to make sure that your home is equipped to manage whatever your care needs are. So to Cole's point, really the planning starts well before retirement for long-term care. Is the home appropriate, like you had said, is the home appropriate for us to age in place? If not, what improvements need to be made and when? And then from there, it's also, okay, well, realistically, what does my family history show, or what could I potentially see as the care that I'll need given whatever symptoms may come up? Because obviously Alzheimer's versus physical needs are two very different things.
Yeah, and I just want to pause you real quick on the home piece before we keep going. Is in part, it is your home setup, but where is your home relative to the grocery store, or where's your home relative to the hospital? Because mm-hmm. if you're still independent, still capable of driving, you might not be in a position where driving 45 minutes makes sense. But if we can drive up the road 5 minutes, that's appropriate. That's easier. If the hospital, if God forbid we need an ambulance for whatever reason, is it 5 minutes away, 10 minutes away, or 30? Every minute makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking about retirement too. So location matters a lot.
That's a great point. And the conversation, when I hear long-term care, my brain goes to basically nursing care. But what mm-hmm. what people, I think, need to kind of open their ears to is long-term care can apply to a 50-year-old that falls down the stairs and needs temporary help in the home or temporary help outside the home.
It could very well. I mean, that may be a – in that instance, unless someone's retired, they've done a fantastic job and they've retired early – long-term care may not be the immediate need. It may be a long-term disability claim. Mm-hmm. So basically, disability insurance protects you while you're still able to earn a paycheck. Long-term care comes into play when you don't have that paycheck coming in, when it is just your assets or your investments or your stuff that's able to provide for you at that point.
And we've done some podcasts on that topic as well.
Yep.
Thanks for clarifying. So scenario set up for you. So somebody's accumulated significant wealth. They're getting ready to purchase long-term insurance. Should somebody consider self-funding it through the portfolio or maybe a business liquidity? What's, you know, is it better to buy long-term care insurance or just self-fund it?
All right. So please don't hate me, but it depends.
Yeah.
I know.
I didn't even know it was possible to do anything but self-pay.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, we'll get into that. Like best case scenario, I think in so many cases is if we can't afford to self-pay, that just gives you flexibility, mm-hmm. right? We don't have to worry about do we qualify for that long-term care insurance policy to actually pay out? Did we check the right boxes kind of thing? Because we've seen it. Like if you check the box where it only provides for nursing home care, but we want to make sure we're staying in place in home or we age in place kind of thing, but we need care, that's not going to pay a dime out to you. Right. So to be able to have that flexibility that we plan to self-fund, that's always preferred, but that's not always the best answer for everybody, whether that's we just don't have the financials to support it, or maybe we have a family history, to Craig's point, of maybe some memory care needs where just cash might not be able to stretch for 5 years, 10 years, where a policy can help offset a lot of that cost. So I think it really comes down to what's your specific situation. What sort of resources do we have? Do we own the home? Because there's some options you could even have there. So it really is on a case-by-case basis.
How does business liquidity fit into this? You know, if somebody has a small business.
If someone has a small business, if that's the time that you're starting to assess, when you have a long-term care event or you're getting ready for a potential long-term care expense, and that's the time you start thinking about what you're going to do with your business, it's probably too late. I mean, realistically, I always joke and say that as soon as you start a business, you should be thinking about what's your exit strategy to get out of that business. Now, that may not be realistic, but that's how I always approach it, because that's going to help orient how are you going to grow your business? What are you going to try to do? Is it try to get as much cash out of that business as humanly possible and then just have it dissolve when you retire? Is it try to grow that business to attract a potential buyer, come in, purchase that from you, and now you've got your nest egg? Like there's different ways that you can go about that, but a business at that point in time, you're not going to really be able to leverage it, especially if you do have a long-term care expense, if it is going to be especially a memory care issue. So that's one of the other pieces too, where yes, if you have that business, you should be thinking about that exit strategy going into it. But from there, it's really just more so, okay, that may be just a thing that goes away at that time. I still have to figure out, do I need this policy? And to Cole's point, it comes down to all the other financial resources, everything else that you have. But the other aspect, too, is now you have to really start to put yourself in that position of thinking, well, how long is my care need going to last? Mm-hmm. Most insurance policies, as we look at it, they're one of two things. They're either a limited term payout, so they may pay out for 3 years or 5 years worth of benefits, or it's a total dollar amount payout. So you may have $100,000. That could be gone in 1 year or that could be gone in 5 years. Doesn't matter, but those are the two ends of the spectrum that you're looking at. And remember, when we think about insurance at the end of the day, whether it's homeowners, whether it's auto insurance, whether it's life, whether it's long-term care, it's all about what risks am I willing to pay out of my own pocket for versus what risks do I want someone else to help me out with. So if you think that, hey, my family history indicates that, you know, Alzheimer's is prevalent or dementia, or, you know, hey, we just really become very feeble towards the end of our lifetimes. Well, then, yeah, you probably want to have a policy that will help with some of those expenses, but you don't always have to.
You said a word that just kind of caught my attention. It's a great segue to the next point. When you've, despite best efforts, sometimes people have adult children who are still financially dependent on them.
Sure.
And you hear horror stories for even the ultimate wealthy. You know, how do you set healthy financial boundaries, you know, while you're ensuring that they don't erode your wealth building strategies to prepare for your end of life?
So I'm going to use Cole's response. It depends.
Sorry, Tracy.
That's how it goes. But again, in all seriousness, it does, because there's so many other factors. Like, for instance, God forbid a family member has an addiction issue or, you know, those kind of things. You're not going to just try to send them out on their way and just not include them moving forward. You may have to offer some kind of care. There may be other people that have needs, whether it's special needs, you know, maybe they have other issues that are going on. Who knows? I mean, you can't just necessarily, again, leave them on their own and hope for the best. No, you've got to try to help them and facilitate them at that point. So you really have to assess, okay, are these needs or is this something that I know that I want to provide for? You know, if whether it's any one of those scenarios that I just laid out, I mean, again, to a certain extent, maybe people can't help themselves. If they're in that point, okay, well, how can I provide? And that, in our minds, is not just how do we make sure that they don't overspend or basically just frivolously spend our money because they may not be aware of it. Maybe that needs an estate plan in place to help manage that. Maybe there's a special trust that's organized.
Shouldn't that always be in place? I mean,
not always. Doesn't have to be.
I would think if you have people, your children, you know, on deck to take care of you at a later time, you would have some of that in place, so at least have some of those conversations.
As we like to say, a trust is just trying to continue control beyond the grave. I mean, a will very much is very simplistic. It's very straightforward. If you have a relatively basic estate plan and you have family members that don't have significant needs, you don't necessarily need a trust.
Yeah. So, Tracy, to your point, like, you should at that point have an estate plan, just whether that estate plan incorporates the trust, if you need that level of control or specificity.
How do you formalize caregiving roles, or how do you help people as they come in as clients? How do you help them formalize their caregiving roles across the family tree? I mean, what do they need to talk about to avoid confusion later? I mean, let's start with the fundamentals and then let's add some of the emotion to it too.
Yeah, I think just the first layer almost is prompting them to ask the question.
100%.
So we see that all the time where maybe it's generational or whatever you want to call it, but there's generally people don't like to talk about death or their health or their own demise kind of thing. So setting our clients up to be able to prompt the question, even making us the bad guy or CFPs are asking about it, right? But what happens if you are in the hospital? Who's making decisions? Or what happens when you pass? Is there a funeral plot that we need to be aware of? Because, I mean, Craig and I, we're coming from experience here where both of our fathers have passed. So to have gone through that and to see what that looks like and how difficult that can be. And Tracy, yeah, you went through that whole process yourself to actually understand what's expected of you before that happens can make so much of a difference than working through that well after the fact.
Well, and even beyond that point, for instance, so you're asking about more so, you know, hey, is it going to be by committee or is it going to be an individual that may be doing caregiving?
I like that phrasing.
So if that's going to be the case, like, it, you know, for instance, I am one of three. If God forbid my mom had an instance where she needed care, well, my youngest brother lives 10 minutes down the road from her. Logically, you would think, okay, well, you're the closest physically. You should be assisting with any of the day-to-day needs. Now, because that's going to be requiring you to balance work and caregiving at the same time, maybe you don't need to manage the finances. If, God forbid, this need were to come up, maybe I would help out with the finances. Mm-hmm. And then let's say there was coordination for certain care events or things like that. Well, since I'm the one managing the finances, maybe my middle brother that's out in Colorado, maybe he's the one that's trying to coordinate care events, and then he relays everything. That would be the dream scenario where you have a true team that's organized trying to get things together. Sometimes reality is that's all going to fall on one person to do. Mm-hmm. And now you're essentially a full-time person that's doing the caregiving. You're managing their finances. You're doing all of the day-to-day stuff. That's going to be a tricky situation to be in, but it's an important role nonetheless. And sometimes it's splattered in between. I mean, it doesn't always need to be this significant care event. To your point, maybe it's an extended relief to get back up to full health. And we need someone to drive dad to his physical therapy appointments 3 days a week. Okay, well, hey, he can still do everything else. It's fine, but physical therapy is going to go on for 3 months. That's a different role. That's a different obligation. Maybe dad doesn't have the money to pay the medical bills. Well, okay, if I've got three siblings, maybe one chips in for one payment, the next one chips in for so on and so forth. So it can be different things. But to Cole's point, it all starts off with a conversation that's usually uncomfortable and unwelcoming mm-hmm. because we're talking about us not being the Superman or woman that we are. And that's just hard for people to fathom and think about.
Mm. Okay, kind of going back a little bit in time, modeling multi-generational financial dependencies. So as your wealth grows, so do your financial obligations.
Sure.
Juggling kids, caring for parents is a tough one. I've been there myself.
Oh, yeah.
Very difficult times. Requires a lot of energy, a lot of emotional intelligence, a lot of patience. So as your wealth grows, how do you, you know, as you're helping parents with their health care needs while you're ensuring your children's needs and their education and your own retirement goals, how do you help people structure assets and cash flow or at least get their head in the game to manage the overlapping needs of these different generations?
Yeah. So I think we obviously need to have the conversation early. So that goes back to the last question is what sort of expectations do you have for your parents? And then generally it goes the step further of, well, how do we envision or what do we understand of our parents' finances? Do we anticipate they may need help, which they may be kind of keyed in a little bit depending on living arrangements? Absolutely. As early as we can. Because obviously the sooner we can start planning, if that's a cash flow piece that we need to be able to commit to, or if we think, well, maybe at some point we need to upsize our home because we may need to bring in mom or dad or whomever to stay with us, that in-law suite kind of arrangement. We need to start thinking about that as soon as possible. So that extension is just what do the parents' finances look like? Do they own their home? Do they have a mortgage? What's their cash flow look like? Are they entitled to any retirement plans, any pensions, anything like that? So as best as possible, we can start to plan to say, okay, well, what should we plan to set aside, if anything, so that we can help either supplement or fund parents coming to live with us?
And it ultimately comes back to just them focusing on what their goals are. I mean, you know, again, to your point, kind of being in sandwich in between those two generations where maybe I've got aging parents that need further assistance because maybe they didn't have the right financial savviness to get themselves fully on track. Meanwhile, I've got a kid that's struggling to find their first job and they're not couch surfing, but they're staying in their room and
doing their best.
Yeah, they're trying to get out there, trying to get their first big person job at that point. But hey, it's just a tough market at that time or whatever. This is where we have to understand from the very beginning with people, what are your non-negotiables? Like when we talk about retirement, it's, you know, everyone's got this idea of, hey, it's got to be age 65, I'm done. Well, as we've seen here, as people are living longer, as everything else is transpiring, 65 is now a very negotiable age. A lot of people still latch on to that because that's when we become Medicare eligible, but people are working longer and longer. Some are working because they enjoy it. Some are working because they have to. But let's say someone says that they're, hey, I've got to absolutely just drop everything. I'm done working at 65. That's my non-negotiable. All right, if that's your non-negotiable, then we have to focus on what we can negotiate. What are your expenses going to be? How are you going to help out? Mom and dad may want to go to a facility, but you know what? You can't afford that if you're going to retire at 65. Mm-hmm. You've got to be the care provider in your home. So to Cole's point, now we've got to start building the home or making the home accessible for whatever care needs are.
And doing our best to set realistic expectations along the way, exactly what you're saying.
Exactly. And then, hey, maybe that means that we can only offer support for so long for, you know, our child that's still getting ready to join the workforce here. And maybe we can't help with their rent payments if they've got an apartment, or maybe we can't allow them to do all these other things. Maybe they have to stay at home at that point too. Like that's where the conversation happens. So it starts with, okay, what is your goal? What absolutely can we not adjust? And then we have to figure out, okay, well, if that's the one lever that we have to leave locked in, what can we do with these other levers to get you where you need to be?
And leave the guilt at the door.
Very well said.
I mean, yeah.
That's really, very well I think, said. A big element to this is
the... It's hard, yeah.
Shutting that down because you feel... And feeling guilty for shutting it down, yep, for yourself. I think you both understand this as parents. You always want your kids to have more and do better than you did.
Yeah, no. So, I want them to do just as good.
I can do fine.
I think most of us want to be able to give our kids, you know, a better life than we had. So that's tough. Yeah. That's a tough one. Mm-hmm. That's complete emotion. I'm sitting here empathizing, thinking if my kids came to me today and needed me to turn my world upside down, I don't know, it'd be tough not to do it.
I do like your kids. It'd be hard for me to not let you do that, too.
They like you, too. Cool. All right, so what if you don't have children? Or what if your adult kids just can't or won't help care for you? What are the options for somebody as they prepare for this stage of life?
Spend away their inheritance. Leave them with nothing.
Yeah, well said. Well said.
But no, in all seriousness, I mean, that's at the end of the day, okay, if you're not going to help.
Bitter.
No, it can come across bitter, absolutely, but that's just, again, blunt. Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're not going to get any help, you've got to, you've got to pay for the help.
Mm-hmm. You're saying literally.
Yeah, so, but yeah, I mean, that's really what it boils down to is, hey, spend away the inheritance. They're going to get left with nothing, and that's fine, but that's okay. Yeah, I mean, that's what you have to understand as you're looking at this.
Because the mindset, I mean, you've worked the last 30, 40, 50, however many years, mm-hmm, right, to accumulate that wealth, spend it. Don't go to the cheapest, whatever, nursing home, wherever that you can. Make sure you're getting the care that you deserve that you've worked so hard for.
Yeah, good point. Talking about tax strategies, for somebody whose loved one steps up to care for them, are there... elder care expenses that they can write off on their taxes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's kind of a couple levels to it. So there's the primary at the federal level. So I think it's based on the number of people you're providing for. So if it's one, I believe it's up to a $3,000 credit for dependent care. And then I think it can go as high as $6,000 for two plus. But to take that a step further, I think a lot of states now are starting to offer care for caregivers. So it's very much state dependent. There's probably only a handful or two that are actually doing it. So you'd have to look into your specific state. What do they offer? Work with a CPA.
Review with your accountant.
Talk with your CPA. But absolutely. Yeah, so that's there can be more benefit out there beyond just the emotional, the financial aspect.
Yeah, that I come was just on that, watching, I think it was one of the local stations last night, and they were talking about a new caregiver tax deduction, mm-hmm, that could be forthcoming. You guys know anything about that?
We don't want to speculate on what future tax laws may be. If it does come into play and is signed into law, by all means. But to Cole's point, like dependent care expenses, we know that. That's a real thing. Mm-hmm. We can take advantage of that. Long-term care insurance premiums, also additional or excess medical payments that you make. So if you do have a care facility or if you do need to go to a hospital or rehab, those kind of things, you may be able to deduct some of those as well. But again, review with your accountant, talk through those kind of things. But yeah, there's plenty of strategies and tools that are out there. You just have to have the right financial team in place to make sure that you're not leaving money on the table.
That's the one thing I see being here every day with you guys is the importance of having the team of pros. And not to be salesy, but I'll go ahead and say it. This is one of the other many intricacies of financial planning, mm-hmm, that you can really screw up if you're not doing it the right way. So get some help. Put your team together. Take the time and make the effort to ensure your quality of life later. That's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. And don't forget to share with your friends. We'll catch you on the next topic.
That's a wrap for today's episode of the Managing to Be Wealthy podcast. We help you make the most of your money without any hidden fees or commissions. Remember, the best investment you can make is in yourself and your financial future. Keep listening for more expert advice and tips. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. To schedule a 1-hour complimentary consultation to discuss your financial concerns, visit our website, managingtobewealthy.com.